This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Joe Madden.
He's got that flair about him. When his name's announced, the place erupts all the time, but he's always in the middle of something good.
Manager for the Chicago Cubs.
And then Cliff and Shelley, the Penguins. I mean, all this stuff, the Penguins, like, pooped all over. They poop every 15 minutes, apparently. That's what Penguins do. All over the brand-new rug on the other side. That's what's kind of fun to watch.
Yeah, I learned a lot from watching Joe.
Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes on 670 The Score.
Okay, nice.
Joe Madden joins me on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles for you to choose from. I am Lawrence Holmes, and every Tuesday at noon, we get the opportunity to talk with the manager of your Chicago Cubs. You can follow him on Twitter at CubsJoeMad. And Joe Madden now joins me here on The Score. What's up, Joe?
Good afternoon, Lawrence. I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. It was good to see you yesterday. Got a chance to kick it in the press conference a little bit and see what was going on. But before the game, before I get started and into the baseball stuff, I just wanted to tell you, I walked, after I left Wrigley yesterday, I went into Madden's post because I wanted to check it out. And I loved it. I loved all of the classic photos that were in there. How much were you involved in the look of the place?
Actually, a lot. You know, the design team came to Hazleton last two Christmases ago, and we drove around in my station wagon, and we went to some of the bright spots, like Bellhop's, which has been there, from 1930-something, I think. And then we went from Bellhop's to the Oval Lawn. We also went to Snaps. It was literally Snaps is there almost from the turn of the century. And at Bottlenecks in West Hazleton, took them around and showed them what I kind of liked. And Tony was there, of course, too. We sampled all the different bar foods and told them I like that salad at Madden's Post. The antipasto salad is pretty much what it looks like back home from Bellhop's. We jazzed it up a bit. So, and then when it came to the colors, the design, the fabrics, all the 70s kind of vibe in the Flamingo Room, all of that, the girls were really great. We talked a lot, and we put it together. So I was really pleased with the outcome. I thought they did a wonderful job, and I think as people show up, they're gonna enjoy it also.
It's right on the corner of Waveland and Clark. If you want to check it out before you head over to Wrigley, maddenspost.com is where you can check it all out. Now, yesterday you said after the game that this was Darvish's best start. Why was that the case?
I thought he was in total control of himself out there, command of his pitches, command of himself. He looked very confident. Stuff was outstanding. Fastball command was better with up to 96, 97. The slider cutter was where he wanted it to be, threw a couple good splits. He was just like totally in control of you, Darvish, yesterday, and that's what I saw. And as we move this thing forward, the more we see of that, the more we're going to like it, because his stuff, top 10, top maybe even 5 stuff in all of baseball, is just coming out of his hand. And as he gets more confidence in himself, man, heads up, because that's what it could look like. Listen, ground ball up the middle and a loop on the right field line. Stuff happens in our game, just like the conclusion of yesterday, but I thought he was outstanding.
What do you think the crowd support meant to him? Because he had kind of circled this start, saying that he needed to have a good start at Wrigley Field, and there are a lot of people behind him last night as he continued and gave you a quality start.
I think it means a lot to him. I've gotten to know him, obviously, over the last couple of years. He's really a thinker, man. Takes everything and dissects it according to his bringing up, which I appreciate. I'm the same way. So getting to understand and know him and what a deep thinker he actually is, and he really cares, man. This guy cares about everything, actually. He's a wonderful human being. I like him a lot. And as he pitches here in this market, he's learning to how to adjust to this and be a Chicago Cub and pitch in Chicago with this wonderful ballpark and fan base and everything about it. He's not from Hazleton, PA. He's from Japan, and he's got a different background, and so he's learning, and he's adjusting, and I really appreciate that about him, and I think he's going to continue to get better.
How did Caratini do receiving him?
wonderfully. Vic does a great job. I think, again, you could watch it from the side. I thought his pitch calling was outstanding. We might have disagreed once or twice all night. Victor is, and you saw Victor's line drive up the middle. You saw his patient approach at the plate. Victor's a good baseball player. And as he's also very young, and he just needs more time back there. But I thought Vic did a wonderful job.
What was it like for you to have Jake Arrieta back in the ballpark?
Well, I love it. I mean, Jake and I are good. He and I hit it off in the beginning. Again, the fact that one of the rules I had, one of my few rules, is that if you wanted to wear sandals on an airplane, you had to paint your toenails. And of course, Jake walked on one day with painted toenails, and that said it all to me. That's my kind of guy. So he and I could hang out anytime. I love the way he competes. He's a different cat, the way he just approaches everything, and I appreciate everything about him. So I'm upset that we didn't win the game, but as Jake continues to move forward for him and his family, I just wish him nothing but the best.
In the pregame, you had talked about the blackout game against Pittsburgh and the wild card game. So why was that such an important moment for not just the Cubs overall, but Jake as an individual?
Well, I mean, that put him in another stratosphere, put us in another element there. We just not had been there in a long time. And listen, winning a wild card game is not easy. I don't want to say it's not any fun, because if that's the only alternative, I'll take it, but very difficult. And against a really good Pittsburgh team, who actually, I think they won 98 games, we won 97. So that there, I think for him, elevated him internally, mentally, that he knows he could pitch that well under those circumstances. And for us as an organization to be able to accelerate our ascension by being able to do that was very large. So that particular moment, like I said, really stands out. And his game in Minnesota, I think it was an 8-0 shutout, complete game. I thought that really put him on his way, too.
I thought that was a nice moment when he came to the plate and got the standing ovation from the Wrigley Field crowd. I understand that you're in it. You're there managing. You know these people. But do those moments even get to you?
I don't know that they get to me, but I appreciate them. There might be a time that it would be. I mean, I'm really emotional. I cry easily, so I'll concede that. But like yesterday, I was just happy for the moment. And I was really proud of you, Darvish. I mean, you stepped back. I don't know if everybody noticed that, but you stepped back behind the mound and let Jake have his moment. And I thought the whole thing was well played. Well played, deserved. Jake will always be a big part of Chicago history. He's iconic here in regards to what he did, the year that he had. So I thought the moment was outstanding.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score as we talk about his first place squad. Let's talk about check swings, Joe.
Oh, my God.
What's your opinion on how check swings should be called?
Well, I mean, I think there needs to be research done. And, I mean, weirdly, when you talk about technology, they want to reinstitute the strike zone. I don't want that. I think there's going to be a lot of unintended consequences there that aren't going to be good. I don't think it's going to benefit the hitters as much as the hitters think. And with the check swing, I mean, technology-wise, there's got to be a method from an angle to determine, you know, how to laser when a bat exceeds a certain spot. I don't even understand why. I'm thinking that even implanting a chip in the head of every bat somehow that would permit this to be enacted. So that's the one part that really annoys me more than anything, is the subjectiveness of check swings. Every umpire is different. I don't blame them. I mean, they all see it differently. I'm not banging on Hunter from last night at all. It's a really tough play for them to make it, especially when a hitter uses a dark bat at night. You could hardly see the end of the bat. I've noticed that from the time dark bats came out in the minor leagues. You could hardly see the end in a check swing. So it's a really difficult play. Make that one easier. Don't worry about the strike zone. Don't worry about an electronic strike zone. Let's do something about check swings.
When I heard you talking about the subjectivity of it, I thought back to being younger and how almost all of us have a different definition of what a check swing is. I mean, I remember being told, you know, if guys break their wrist, then it's an actual swing, or it's where the bat head, if the bat head crosses the plate. So what did you grow up believing a check swing was?
Well, breaking the wrist, I mean, that's obviously, if a guy breaks his wrist, he's probably swinging the bat anyway. The check swing for me is when the bat head exceeds home plate. That's what I see. And if a guy's able to prevent the bat head from crossing the front of the plate, to me, then he's checked the swing. if the bat head at all exceeds the front of the plate, like that perpendicular line coming up from the plate, then he's swamped. That's it. Sometimes I think a lot of these umpires are reading when the body moves forward and the wrists still stay in the back position and the bat head never exceeds that point, they're calling that a swing. And again, it's in the eye of the beholder, man. Umpires are going to call it differently. That's not going to change until we get to the point where we could actually, that's the technology, man. Figure out that technology. We got something, I think.
Since we're talking about rules, what was the point you were trying to get across in your initial protest of Sean Doolittle's motion?
Well, it was all about Carl Edwards. That's all that was about. First of all, I don't like the rule. I think it's not necessary. But it was enacted upon us in spring training. And so if my guy is going to be impacted by it, why would I permit another guy and another team to be able to do it? So, you know, it was not about Sean Doolittle. He's very good. He's a very good pitcher, and my intent was not to mess with him. My intent was to mess with MLB based on the inconsistency with the rule. So I was out there to protect Carl, pure and simple. And regardless, you know, semantically, what is the truth? What is real? I don't know. We could have that philosophical discussion for the next 2 hours. But when I got the definition back from MLB, I'm saying, no, it's not right. I mean, grazing, touching, tapping, foot down, doesn't matter. If your foot actually comes back to the ground in any way, shape, even if the spike grazes it, then you've tapped it again. So it's weirdly, it's almost, it has to be written in a court of law somehow by a bunch of lawyers to try to disseminate the language, because to me it's wrong. What Doolittle did is tantamount to what Carl had done, and you can't like splice the language based on whether it just grazed or not.
Were you expecting that Doolittle would have the reaction that he's had to it?
Meaning, I think he's kind of like come back a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I mean, you figured that a guy is going to be a little salty thinking that you're playing mind games with him instead of you're trying to make a larger point than just what was going on in that particular game.
Yeah, with all due respect, it wasn't about Doolittle at all. Not at all. He could have been any one of their pitchers doing it. It didn't matter. It could have been their worst pitcher, their best pitcher. It didn't matter. It was just about the moment, the event itself. So I have no issue. Hey, Doolittle, he's a sharp guy. I've heard him on TV. I've heard him speak. I've read his stuff. He's a sharp guy. I really like him. You know, he's my kind of guy. But no, it had nothing to do with him at all. He was just a vehicle.
How's Javi doing?
Well, he's not going to start today. I'm going to find out when I get there. He was still sore yesterday. I need to just get a little bit more detail from the trainers today. But he's not awful by any means, but it's just something we really want to be careful with so that does not become prolonged. This guy's way too valuable for us over the course of an entire season to worry about one game in May. So I'll know more when I get in there, but I'm not starting him as of right now.
And you had said yesterday that you had planned a scheduled day off for him in this series. With a guy like that who plays 100 miles an hour,
right,
what's your strategy in getting him to understand, look, we need you, even though we want to play you 162, we got to get you your days off?
I just talked to him. My guys are great. I mean, we have great conversations. It's wide open right now, and I'm so, like, I don't know how many times I've told you how much I'm enjoying this. So I've already had that conversation with him about taking him out of bad games. I said, I just want to get you off your feet whenever I can. And with these longs, early in the season, all that was taken care of, whether it was him or Contreras, the days off took care of both of them. I wasn't really that concerned. But now we get to those points where the days off aren't as frequent, so you have to manufacture it somehow. So I was going to give him the last game off on Thursday. That was going to be his day off, day game after a night game. But right now, if he's well to play tomorrow, we'll just let him go because he would have had 2 days off. But I don't know where this is at yet. But guys that play, like Rizzo, you got to watch later, a little bit later on in the year. Contreras, my rule is like 3 and done, but this one was 4. The last one was 4 before he had yesterday off. Those are those 3 guys. And KB is an outlier, man. I don't know. He may need a day off once in a while, but he's just he's a different animal, man. He just he's so athletically gifted. He really does not like or want days off. So I really have to keep track of him, too.
For sure. I mean, a lot of these guys, they're alphas, and they want to be out there trying to help you do whatever it is you can. Every time I see Descalso, I just, when I'm watching games and making notes, I go, that's a Joe guy. Am I right about that Descalso's your type of dude?
Oh yeah, I'd hang out with him in a heartbeat. I played with guys like that all the way through. Again, you got, you know, in, from my perspective, conversationally, and like I said, conversation's wonderful with everybody. With him, it takes a different layer to it. It's just that he's so he's just such a grown up. So, you know, you're able to really have a normal conversation with him. He gets it. He knows what you're doing and why you're doing it. He has no ego regarding himself in regard to success. Of course, he wants to be successful, but it's all about team with this guy. This guy's a winner. He's a proven winner. He's not hitting like he can right now, but he will. And he's actually playing a really good second base. You're right. He is my kind of player.
When you're trying to juggle all of that, where you're trying to make sure you get enough innings for Addison, get enough innings for Descalzo, how do you approach that with those guys and saying, look, you're on my mind. I am trying to make sure that you get what you need.
Yeah, again, that's daily. I you know, with Addison right now, Addison's kind of like been the lowest on a totem pole, but he's really starting to come around. He's hitting, the ball's coming off the bat hot. He looks really good at shortstop right now. Addison could not be handling the moment better. I just, again, with the handling the lineups out in advance, I think that helps them mentally, prep-wise, and they know when they're going to play in advance. So they know that it's not based on did I have a good day or a bad day the day before. They know that. They know that it's laid out in advance. I'm trying to, like you're saying, parcel out time and try to match them up as well as I can. So they've been wonderful about it.
Quintana will go for you tonight. He wasn't as sharp, and not every start can be a perfect game, but what corrections are you hoping that he makes in tonight's start from the last one?
Well, I hope that it's not raining like it was in Cincinnati. It was a tough day to pitch. He was going so well, not unlike Kyle was the other day, going well. Then I mean that last when they got those couple runs before the rain came down, it was pretty nasty out there, and he's sliding a little bit. And listen, these are the things my guys are not gonna make excuses about. I love that we don't make excuses, and even though we know that there might be an underlying cause. So I listen. He's going to go out there. He's going to let it roll like he normally does. I just like when he incorporates his changeup and curveball a little bit more often, which he's been doing. But the other night he was going good until the weather got kind of nasty on him.
Cishek's performance on Sunday night. My goodness! Like watching that guy be able to really do an old school save for you. How important was that for the rest of the guys in the pen?
It was very large. We needed that moment. He knew that before the game. We told him two innings ended up being two and a third. He came out. You could see the assertiveness. He knew he's going more than one. He knew that. So what is he's attacking the strike zone. He's not playing around. He didn't have like a 20-pitch inning. He had actually after the little base hit, I think he ended up with 20. I thought he would be good between 30 and 35 on that night. And, you know, we had Ryan warming up, and then I think we had one after that possibly. But it's juggling the bullpen right now, giving them all opportunity and not trying to overwork anybody. It's kind of a juggling act right now. And he was wonderful. Listen, Brad Brock was outstanding last night. Wow. That's the best I've seen stuff out of his hand. A little bit unfortunate you're talking about on the check swing, but again, a little blooper over the first baseman's head. I thought that was by far the best stuff I've seen out of Brad Brock also.
Let me go back to the hobby for a second. On Sunday's broadcast, Alex Rodriguez was talking about that fielder's choice that got you the first run Sunday night, and Javi was sliding into first base. What's your feelings on sliding into first base?
I prefer you run through the bag. It's normally more efficient and normally is going to prevent the injury that the dive's going to cause. When you're in a competitive moment like that, you lose all of that kind of thought process. You want to be safe. You're just trying to be safe. And there might be a time too if the first baseman's coming off the bag to catch the ball towards the home plate area, that you might feel that the dive or slide is more effective just to make sure he doesn't tag you also. So if runner is trying to avoid a potential tag, I get it. But if he's not, it's always better. And the thing that's really underrated is hitting the front edge of the bag. You got to hit the front edge of the bag, not hit the top of the bag. In spring training, you practice this all the time when guys are running the first base. Derek Jeter was one of the best I've ever seen at that. Always hitting the front edge of the bag, which gets you there a click sooner, safer out.
Okay, now, Joe, you're going to win this game that we're going to play because you're the pro here.
Okay.
But around, I'm going to ask my crew in a little bit, but I'm just curious, who's the best player that you played against and that you sat there, you went, oh, my God, like that, you can tell that this person is special.
Wow. Ricky Henderson stands out in the Cal League in 1977, I think. Ricky obviously was pretty good. I played with Tony Gwynn. I mean, Tony was obviously outstanding. I played with Tony in Boulder. And so playing with, I'd say Tony and, Tony was pretty darn, and Ricky, probably two of the best I've played with or against.
All right, Tony, do you have a guy that you, because Tony, you were a high school basketball star. Who was the basketball player that made you look?
Jabari Parker.
Okay, yeah. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Rick Camp, you got one?
Not that I played against, but I witnessed Candace Parker play high school basketball and dunk on a couple people from my high school.
That's pretty good, too. I've got Cliff Floyd and Pat Fitzgerald. Pat Fitzgerald was the scariest person I'd ever seen on a football field.
Really?
And Cliff Floyd hit a ball that I'm pretty sure is still going.
Well, Cliff hit those low liners that just climbed. It's like a 737 taking off. He was incredible.
Absolutely. He was a terror. As a sophomore catcher, seeing that guy walk up with an aluminum bat was a terrifying prospect, and he was unbelievable.
Well, Ricky broke the California League record stealing bases while I was catching. I had thrown him out earlier in the game at second base, but then he beat me at third base. And he was actually, you know, that good even back then. He had the power, he had the speed. And then I actually worked with him a bit with the Angels in the late 90s. An incredible talent.
Joe, as always, I appreciate the conversation. I will see you at the ballpark soon.
You guys be well. Thanks again. See ya.
That's Joe Madden. Follow him on Twitter at Cubs Joe Mad, and go check out his restaurant. It looks pretty dope, man. I walked in there and everyone was like, I just wanted to check it out. And you see the people like enjoying pierogies and all sorts of other stuff. It was tremendous.
How swaggy was Ricky Henderson, though?
Man, super swaggy. I love that Joe put in there, you know, I did throw him out once. I love that.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.